Accession number 4686, room number 6.
Mr. Iveson's tape 6. So you were taken off by car, were you, to your appellate tribunal?
Well, you're taken from... I was transferred from one prison to another. I was transferred from Walton to Manchester. You have a medical similar as before, where they ask you if you're all right after you've stood waiting in Walton. And when you get to Manchester, you're kept there until the doctor comes in, what time it is. And again he says, are you all right? And that's your two medical examinations. The day after, I was taken to the appellate tribunal in St. Peter's Square Library, handcuffed again. And I'd been interviewed by Fred Barton, who was, I don't know whether he was then, but the late he was national chairman of the ILP, and a Quaker, and a close friend of mine, and he conducted it like a lawyer, asking questions and so on. And they fetched my first Sunday school teacher, who was a member of the ILP, to speak for me. And one of those fellas up there who were in the First World War, he was listening, and he fetched me 20 cigarettes. I was smoking like a chimney in there. So I went through the appellate and he upheld it, my appeal. And in upholding that appeal, they give conditions. I had to go on the land, hospital work, fire brigade, ambulance, so many things. And they let you out. But they don't let you out there, and then this fella comes to take me home. You go back in, and you have to wait then for an Home Office release. And whatever you were doing, when the Home Office release comes, you drop, and they run you out. They can't get you out quick enough, and you're on the double almost. And I come home. They give you a warrant to come home, and that's it. And you don't know when you're coming out, but you come out as soon as it comes through from the Home Office. So I came home. Well, with no work, I couldn't get work. Nobody could start me. It wasn't they wouldn't do, they couldn't. So we started doing jobs on our own. That's how we got to Bob's, putting a bath in and so on. And this went on for a time. And then I was called up again, you see. They gave me jobs, you know, to go to, and I wouldn't go.
Oh, is that so? You were saying you got this conditional exemption, meaning you could work in hospitals or defence work. You refused to do that, did you?
I refused to do it. The view is simply this, that you're not prepared to release a man on a job to go and do what you were not prepared to do. That was the absolutist line.
And that's what you considered yourself, did you?
Yes. I could have easily been a fireman. I was used to a lot of work, more used than many of them that were on fire brigade. It's not talking silly, building trade worker. I was used to water mains. There were so many things I was used to, working in buildings and on buildings and all the rest. Well, they could easily have made me into a fireman, with a little bit of drilling for shipping, which would have released one of those to go in the army, which I weren't prepared to do. So we didn't take that view. Now, that was when they finally bring you up at Nelson Court to summons you for not carrying out the conditions. Well, by this time, you found out the law on where you stand. You're not a lawyer or a barrack room lawyer, but you do know that particular law. And for refusing a direction from the Labour Exchange, was liable for 3 months imprisonment. For refusing a direction from a tribunal, he was liable to 12 months. Well, I knew that, not being clever. We knew it. When I came before court, they're talking about 3 months, you see. And it weren't for me to enlighten them. when all of a sudden Roebuck, the solicitor, jumped up and says, this is a different to previous cases. He's refusing he must have been reading it over there. It's a tribunal direction is refused, which is liable to 12 months or so much, or both, you know, that always comes in, doesn't it? So, he was a Labour mayor who I knew. Don't misunderstand that, he was a Co-op Methodist grocer, always singing songs. And he was a Labour councillor, and he, working for the Co-op, we used to do repairs on his shop, you know. He knew me all right. Always been a miserable sort. Him and I never ate it. And I thought, well, I know what's going to happen today. You might as well have a bit of something out of it. So I thought, no crawling, no anything. It's bang at him. So when you got to speak, which is in there, but it wasn't all, I remember saying, which is in there, I stood in that dock, I was in no way ashamed that morning. In fact, I said, I felt more comfortable stood in that dock receiving a sentence than I would be sat up there handing one out. And you see, this, he was the mayor and he was his magistrate, he was chairman at Baines. He's dropping his head, you know, he couldn't face me. Well, then I got 3 months. So I was taken by a copper. Now, that was the first time there was any hostility shown towards me. I knew this Bobby, a local one, and he tried to exhibit me, taking me on the bus, you know. The one that took me down into cells was most friendly, wanted to give me lights for my cigarettes and could have my cigarettes, you know, to Chief Bobby. But this one who took me, a fella called Moss, we fell out before we got to Street End and told him I'd already been before a tribunal. He'd no decision to make. His opinions didn't count, all he were going with me. And if he didn't want to go with me, give me my bus ticket, I'd go myself. I knew where to go. That's before we left town. So you're taking on the bus, and I remember the bus driver shouts out, best of luck. I don't know whether they knew what I were in for, who I were, or what it was, just a friendly deal to a bloke who was going in, I don't know. And I was taken in. Now, that was an easier sentence than the other. Much easier. When I was waiting to see the governor, he came and took me right out, did the second engineer, and his name was Blatchford, which is a name not on its socialist movement, and took me to the governor and said, I want this man as a red band. Well, a red band, you move about with it. You can't move from there to there, you know, without a screw. But with a red band, you can go anywhere. But if you come to a locked door, you wait and they'll open it for you. And he had his red band there, and he had red band on, and I was out in quick time, and he's talking to me, and he turned out a real tough Welshman, a real tough. And that's where I worked in female prison.
This would be in Manchester?
In Manchester, Strangeways.
Strangeways, I see, yes.
And I was a red band, as I tell you. I walked about on my own. Even went in females on my own, which was unheard of. And a screw retired in 1 week, says, well, this is all new to me, but they've let you in. I had a ladder with a key, which was unheard of. But it must have been wartime and, you know, shortage of men.
Do you think they'd heard of your work that you did at Walter
Prison? Oh, yes,
prison?
That's how you... It goes through, does your... record. And that's why we're taken straight forward. Because the fellow, when I left before to go there, sent in a request that I be taken onto the works department. He said he'd do that for me. Not in bike shop. But I weren't in long enough to be taken onto the works. It weren't worthwhile for a couple of days. And he told me, says, he said, have you been in prison before? He knows full well he has all the papers there. I said, yes. He said, where? I said, Walton. He said, what were you doing? I said, I went on the works department. Let's see who's at, and he said, Mr. Alden. That's right. And what were you doing? He knows full well it's all there. Because he let it out and said, they'd sent for you to go on to the works, but when your release came through that day, you know, we knew you were going out, it weren't worthwhile putting you on because they'd get me a bike shop for a day or two. But they weren't giving me a chance this time, I went straight in. and this red van was sent out, and there was a plumber screw there who were only a poor un. He didn't know his job, and he tried to get me, which meant he'd have been sat down and I'd been doing the job. They wouldn't have it because he was a trade screw, and all he did was wind clocks up with a labourer going around winding clocks up. It's true. So he said, if he comes messing round, ignore him, forget him altogether, and you can tell him so. So when he come and he said, what's up with plumber? And being a bit sarcastic, I said, well, I can make it, I can do this, which was a slap at him, you see, and he cleared off. He knew that I were out, so I was well away, I was covered. Well, I got out at nights. When I say got out at nights, I got out of my cell, he didn't give me about half an hour for me dinner, for me tea. And then he fetched me out, which is a good do, you know, 8 o'clock, you know, sat in there. And then you get come and get it. As at 8 o'clock you go into, and they give you a coke, you know, that chocolate. But they put milk in, sugar, they don't for lads. But they do at night, and they give you a piece of dough or some bread.
And when you went out of your cells, where did you go then?
Well, I painted condemned cells in Manchester at night. Two of us, and with a bridge painter, he couldn't paint a window frame, you know. He was just used to a big Turk's head brush. But I did window frames and round doors and so on. And we did, because I laid awake that night wondering whether I should do it. And I argued with myself, and I couldn't see I was doing anything against the fella, because I don't approve of capital punishment. In seeing his cell was clean, it were neither doing him any harm. I don't say it were doing him much good, but at least it wasn't doing him any harm.
Did you ever see the men in the condemned cells?
We saw one at Liverpool, and I managed to see him with being out, just walking round on his own. He didn't walk through the other. And I weren't in when there was anybody hung. I was taken away from there before but I believe he was hung there afterwards. I think I read it afterwards. But there was no one in. But it's a funny feeling going into a condemned cell. It's a double cell, you know. And yet they were their own private visiting box. I'll talk to you about the visits in a minute, if you like. And that's if it's of any interest.
Indeed, yes.
And so I was doing all sorts of repairs into females.
Mm. Well, what did you do for the female block? Was it?
Well, they had toilets and all that.
Yes, and could you, you know, describe their conditions compared with the men?
Same as in fact, the women was like the fellas. You get a lime washing, whitewashing gang, and you could see they were real rough necks of lads, tattooed all over. You know, they used to select and pick the real rough lads for the rough jobs. Are they done the same in the women? Girls tattooed all over and their hair cropped and they'd be whitewashing and they'd be, and we used to go in and put scaffold up for them. A rat rig, you know, where they could do it. And they used to do painting as well. And I was in the hospital wing. They used to call it itch, scratch. What was it? Itch, scratch and VD and TB. That was it, four floors. The top cells were TB, I think, and they were enamelled. The others were whitewashed and, you know, just painted. Well, the VD section was on another landing. Itch is scabies. Itch is scabies. And scratch is the live things in the, you know, wet things in their hair. And they crop it, well, they didn't, I suppose, not straight through. They wouldn't cut, lift it all off. Or they did look thugs. And they had a mopping and all that, you know. They had the roughest jobs. Where they were a bit rough, they got the rough jobs. They weren't going to lift them up at all in any way. And we were putting new sluices in. In that hospital wing. In hospital wing. It was called hospital wing. It wasn't a hospital in the sense of our hospital, but it was where they were kept separate. The maternity section was like a, you know, a small hospital. But it was terrible to see girls carrying the babies around in those scarves on exercise and then sitting on the wall having a bit of a rest, you know, because some of the babies were only, could only be weeks and months old, you know. And there was something wrong to me that kiddies were brought up in. I don't care what had gone on, and I still take that view. I'm not interested, mother. Those kids are absolutely innocent. That's my socialist Sunday school teaching. If there's anything pure in this world, it's a newborn child. And this was an awful sight to see, but there were some characters among them. Oh, I got some nice old fella. Oh, a man, they were saying. Very man it was.
I expect you were chased all round the block,
you would have been around the block. Oh, you wouldn't have been safe. No, you wouldn't. In fact, when you went in, you'd have a male screw with you and a female screw. That was so there were no larking on either side, you know. And, but yet, you see, during wartime, there's a big influx of into a prison, isn't there? Especially, well, both, but women too, you see. You get prostitution, which increases. You get them following the camps. You get I'm speaking of then, the backstreet abortions. Because anything on a boat, you have a board outside your cell with your offence and all the rest. If there was nothing on, that was abortion. And it was the woman who's done the abortion, you see. And if you saw mother and daughter, if you saw two in a cell in them days, two women, it was mother and daughter.
Were there many mothers and daughters?
An abortion. They were funny, some of the signs, some of the cards you saw. Drunken D and DK, that's drunk and disorderly or something. Oh, DK is drunk, isn't it? Drunk, DK and D, that was it. Drunk and disorderly. 365 offences, one card had. Fellas that were in, you know, for selling buttons on and studs. Is it, you know, they used to go round door to door and sell you a stud for a dunce or whatever it was. Well, they were supposed to have a bit of a licence, hadn't they? Well, it would only be about five bob. If they'd have bought them a licence, they were right. But no, they shoved them in jail. It cost about 30, 40 or 50 quid a week in them days. And doing fella no good. And whereas the licence would have covered it. Well, you saw all that. And they moved the library. And the girls were carrying books, which is unheard of. Is this? So some people won't believe me today on this. I was nearer to those girls than what I'm to you, because I handed books to them. Or if we lifted something up, like there, you're there. And they wouldn't believe it, and some of the old screws wouldn't believe it, certainly wouldn't believe it, but that actually happened. And we took all the books out and put them somewhere on the shelves and made that into a dormitory. Because they were so full up. Outside the men's windows that could look over onto females had iron up. You know, they could. It wasn't close up, but it was like a louver, so she couldn't see out into women. Whether it was supposed to stop excitement or anything, I don't know, but that was it. And, you see, there were funny things about sex in. Well, not funny. They were very strict. You and I, two men or two women, we couldn't have been in this room together. They would have fetched him in, even though there's only this job going on, and he could have sat there. I don't mean man and woman, because that never happened, but two men or two women. If there were two girls, they'd have fetched another one in. If two men, they'd have fetched another one in. And when I were a red man, sometimes I would put it joiner's shop, because the screw had to go out, and it left two joiners in the shop. So I went in, were fetched in to make three up. This is supposed to avoid any illegal sex or so on. Well, what we used to do then was make wooden engines, because toys were bad to get during the war, and we flogged them for 10 woodbines. And I used to be with Red Band, I was the man that went round with a bag of drain rods. Well, I weren't rodding drains, there would be a wood engine in, and I'd have a screw who had to give me 10 woodbines for it. And that's the carry on that I were able to do. This doesn't apply to others. This only applies to somebody like me, who were in there as a tradesman and a Red Band.
What was the attitude of the prisoners in strange ways to the fact that you were a Red Band?
Okay.
Were they jealous at all or resentful?
Well, they know if you're an ARC who's been passing information on, they know that. They shouldn't get to know. No, they knew I were a plumber, you see, and as such they recognise it. There's so many Red Bands. It saves. If you had a Red Band, it meant that there's got to be a screw with you all day, doing nothing at all. He can't do it. He's a disciplined man. He didn't know anything about John. And, that saves a screw if they give you a Red Band, but they only have so many. And you would be in trouble if you did out, you know, really serious. They would take it out of you.
What happened when there were air raids?
Well, they locked you in your cell in Walton, it happened. And instead of locking with the key, they all had bolts on. They'd put bolts on during it, war, big bars outside. And instead of locking with the key, they came round and unlocked, if you were in the cell, if you were air raid, unlocked it and put bolt on. So that it were easier if they had to. Actually, before I went in, a bomb did drop on Walton. And this is an interesting part. There was one or two killed. And the ones, the governor and the chief officer got George Medal or MBEs or something like that. They got something for this year. But there was one or two COs played such a part in helping during the air raid that they reckoned their whole attitude had changed in Walton towards COs because these lads had done such a good job. I went in at time. And I only know from hearsay, and I were told by screws and so on, and they'd done such a good job in helping. They were going on ledges and opening doors to get them out and so on. And because I saw that where the bomb damage had been, the church was bombed. Because when if you went to church, you had to take your chair. And I'm interested in that side, to listen to that. I went at Christmas, you see.
Yes, I was going to ask you about religion. Mm-hmm. But before we go on to that, this must have been very frightening, the fact that...
It was terrible in the cell when that air raid went. And the fella, my cell were next to punishment cell in Walton, where they had bread and water and all that. And the only thing they've got in there is a jug of water and the metal chamber, you know. And he was screaming and shouting when it went. I was taken back in off a job when air raids go, putting me cell. So I just got this book of Trotsky, a great big thick volume. So I sat down at my little table to read it, because it's a big heavy book. And I was reasonably comfortable when these sirens continued again. This bloke went mad next door. He either banging this chamber on the door and screaming, or his metal water jug or something. And he's banging out, screaming like that. Well, that upsets you. I felt awful then. Felt awful. There were times like that when you felt awful. There were times when you phoned. There were times when you got little things like that.
I was going to ask you about your state of mind. You know, even when you first went to prison, although you seem to have a relatively good life because of your trade, I say relatively good because obviously no one wants to be in prison, but you had a wife and a small baby at home, and you've explained your sort of financial circumstances. What was your state of mind, you know?
Well, it was all right, because as right as it ever would be. You're down the first day, you're bound to be. And you looked at this food when you've been, in spite of financial hardship, we never had bad food at our house. And the worst thing that I had was visits. And I stopped, my wife only came once. And I said she didn't come again. You see, you talk through a piece of glass. Well, not, you have glass here, and there's wire gauze around the side. And they sat at that side, and you sat at this side. And you talk and the sound comes through at each side, you know. Well, to sit there and face your wife, and she's come all from Nelson to Liverpool, and she's there that half an hour or so. And Manchester goodbye. And you could see she was looking tired and all that. He'd knock the hell out of you. So I wrote and said, I said, to come again. She went too keen on that. I said, look, you had to come. Well, so did I. Didn't want to be so long. But others that came, I could enjoy it. Like Bill Carradice came and John Burrist. He was the youngest CO on that photograph at First World War. And Bill Carradice was the older brother. They came. Well, we laughed and joked. Then Bob Edwards' brother-in-law, Herbert Sandham, came, and Betty, the friend, and she cried when she went out, but not because she thought it were wrong that her stand should be at the back of that, with that big scribble looking over. And but I enjoyed them coming. But I didn't want Ivy to come no more. And some were taking babies in, you know. Well, I weren't having that. Oh, no. But, my dad came once. How come? Oh, he came with Ivy. He came with Ivy. My dad came.
How did your family take it that you were in prison?
Oh, well, we were all living together in the house, you see.
They supported you?
Oh, my mother, yes.
How but about your father? Because you said...
Well, he'd no money to support financially, but he thought the world of Ivy. And I don't think he disliked me at all. I don't think so. We had his rows and barnies like all fathers and sons. But I don't think he, at first he was too happy, but I think he come to the conclusion that he was dealing with Stan and he had a mind of his own and a will of his own and there was nothing he could do about it. And he'd been ever so pleased because last thing I did was, when I left him, was give him a watch. I had a roll gold watch. It was a second hand one out of a pop shop as I bought. And he hadn't a watch. So I weren't taking it to jail with me. As I left him at court, I said, here, you better look at this while I come back. And he was ever so proud of this here watch. So I think that pleased him, you know. Think little things like that. But, he wasn't, he weren't stupid, but he weren't a bright. He couldn't have written a letter if he crowned him, you know. But he'd have helped somebody with the old man, would he?
Did you ever compare your situation in prison as a CO in the Second World War with your friends who were COs in the First? Did they sort of...
Oh,
did
yes.
Your mind go back to them?
Oh, yes, and you could see it were totally different. Else they'd been telling lies. Because, though, I had to... Dan used to say to me, have you been in prison? When I was talking about smoking and going out and having tea and cakes with women at the street, you know. They couldn't understand this. But they weren't in it. They were rock breaking and mailbag sewing and weaving and all things like that.
And you were going to talk about the religious life.
Well, I was in at Christmas, you know. I was in at Christmas. And they knew I only went to Quakers. But the fella came at Christmas and he said, Luke Plummer, they didn't used to call me by name, they'll just call me Plummer. You see, I was known throughout. You get known. You've got to get known if you're going to get all right. I'll tell you about that in shortly. So it was Christmas and he says, now then, Plummer, I know you don't go to church, but it's in the church, in chapel he called it. The church was bombed, so they had a few candlesticks and a bit of a desk or something. And they called it the church and a piano, and they had no organ had gone and everything. And I can see that pastor there, a dapper little fella, he hadn't the spark of common sense. He, friendly enough and all that, but he was naive as it's possible to be. Because most of the people were hungry. Hungry. And I was, only by getting this extra food, I wasn't. But the others were hungry. They would scrap and do anything to get hold of some extra bread and nothing on it, you know. Or a piece of cold duff or a cold potato. They'd do anything. So we go into this year for Christmas concert. And he said, we're going to have a concert today. Now, you know how you a four-legged chair, there were no forms, you had to take your chair out of you, or you carry it like that. I know they do everything barmy. He stopped the first fella. Well, everybody went, you got four legs into your back and the fella at front got your four legs in. Things like that, you know, you could laugh about it, but it was a bit painful at times. So he went in, and he gets up and makes his speech, opening speech. I remember it to this day. He said, we're going to have a nice Christmas, and we would cater for the eyebrows and the lowbrows and the in-between brows. I thought, he's not doing so bad. But we'd sing a few hymns, have a good old sing. So. He said, we'll start off with that grand old hymn, Bread of Heaven, Feed Me to Know. Well, I could, you know, I could have laughed out. This is typical Christianity and religion. But when they went in to give you a prayer book, a song book, well, I'm not being a religious man, I just shoot it out radiator. You know, this was another where I, it's my sense of humour, perhaps, but I had to laugh out. Hey, put Laurel Nardi on a gramophone record, and then he put somebody singing a pleasant little song, you know. And then he would have another hymn.